Just for that, it was perfect.
Well, well, well. Somebody is really excited for this episode.
I'm really excited.
Shuko is in the candy store.
Absolutely. Je peux monter?
Yeah.
Okay, parfait.
Apparently when Shuko gets excited, she goes back to French, which is great.
Default mode.
Shuko, back in our virtual studio from your trip to the candy store, want to tell us what's going on there?
So, if you guys remember, this was a few episodes back, but the candy store is Bosch's motorcycle workshop in Abstadt near Stuttgart in the south of Germany. And as you might still know, I'm a huge motorcycle enthusiast, but my own bike is quite modest compared to the top of the line motorcycles they have there for testing. So yeah, being there and going on a ride, additionally to that with a fellow French speaker, or French compatriot, as we would say, that was an absolute dream come true.
All right. Well then, Shuko, why don't you take us on a ride? I'm sure you tested some interesting new Bosch systems that hopefully are hitting the road soon.
Mais bien sûr.
From know-how to wow. The Bosch Global Podcast.
So this episode is about motorcycles, but I think it's also about communication, and especially communication between humans and machines.
Telling a machine something is easy. Push a button, select something from a menu, launch a program. Where it gets interesting is when the machine needs to tell you something.
Or let's go even on a higher level, what the machine communicates to you. Like, I don't know, would you agree that using one computer versus another can feel different?
Absolutely. I mean, depending on the operating system, for example, they can have a very different vibe.
Vibes are a really good point. So, vibrations. Do you know what your smartwatch wants to tell you when it vibrates a certain way?
Sometimes, but not always. I think it becomes a little more intuitive over time. Mm-hmm. When you learn that, oh, this vibration pattern means a text message coming in, or this one is telling me the battery is running low.
Exactly. So I would say the bottom line is some technology is more intuitive than others. And it's a big engineering challenge to make us understand what a system is telling us without memorizing the manual and ideally also without looking on the screen.
Of course, because tying it back to motorcycles, looking down can be dangerous.
Yep.
Because you have to look down to see something on the dashboard, as opposed to in my car, where I can kind of have an eye on the road while having a glimpse of the dashboard in my periphery.
Right. And particularly on motorcycles, a lot can happen in those few seconds or few milliseconds that your gaze is not on the traffic. So, you know, motorcycle systems need to be extra intuitive. And that's what has kept the team at Bosch 2WP very busy.
2WP, as in two-wheeler and power sports.
Exactly.
We've talked a lot about their technology before on this show. Actually, that was almost 3 years ago. And they had just rolled out ARAS, Advanced Rider Assistance Systems.
Correct. So if some of you do still remember, it was things like Adaptive Cruise Control, or as we call it, ACC, finally becoming available for motorcycles. But I had a hard time convincing you how much of an accomplishment that was. But thankfully, our Japanese engineer, Yuki, helped win you over. Here's a clip from that episode.
Here's skeptical Jeff. Here he is. I heard the excitement in your voice. I know you really enjoyed it. But I'm not wowed. At least, I'm not wowed yet. Because, to be honest, I mean, driving as a car driver, as a car enthusiast, four wheels, roll cage, seat belts. This is honestly old news. We've had cruise control for decades.
Yeah.
And by now, blind spot detection is pretty standard. I mean, so please educate me. Why should I be wowed here?
Well, maybe as a reminder, a motorcycle is still not a car. So that hasn't changed.
Principally, come on.
And you might think that it sounds, or that it should be simple and relatively straightforward to transfer these systems from cars to motorbikes, but...
Well, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's the same electronics, right?
Yeah, fair enough. And I think Yuki kind of felt the same when he started this job. So remember at the time he was a car, or I'm putting it in quotes, a car person too.
Yeah, sure.
And didn't know how to ride a motorcycle.
I felt the same at the beginning, but once I start working on this topic, I noticed that it is not that simple. So there is many challenging topics to make good functionality and performance differentiated from passenger car.
I remember, though, you did, of course, win me over in the end.
In the end.
So, listeners, if you want to know more about these challenges and how Yuki and his team solved them, go back to our episode titled Road Trip. But Shuko, tell me more about how you're hoping to wow me this time around.
So, this time around, the team have released the second generation of Aras, and it's not just functions we've already heard about. They came up with new assistance systems specifically for motorcycles, and get this, that you will not find anywhere else.
This is a world first for motorcycle, and obviously this does not apply to cars. So in the automotive business, this is a unique function, yes.
Totally unique and a world first. I'm already wowed.
Wow.
The person you heard there is Mathieu Grelot.
The fellow French speaker that we heard at the top of the show.
Oui.
We've got RDA, which is Riding Distance Assist. This is a function where we are always in free riding.
Riding Distance Assist is basically, I would say, the more fun sibling of ACC.
If you're riding alone on a small road or wherever you might be, you're very unlikely to be riding with ACC because it might be a fun road and you want to control your ride. You want to be free riding, as we call it.
I 100%. Completely understand that ACC could be seen as boring. I get it. You set your speed and that's it. Your vehicle, be it a car or a motorcycle, is automatically slowing you down when a slower vehicle appears in front of you.
Yeah, and anytime you're not using your motorcycle to get from A to B on a highway, ACC can be a bit much.
So what does Riding Distance Assist then do differently?
Mathieu has a great way of explaining it.
I think the best comparison would be imagining that you ride with a big air cushion in front of you. That means if there's nothing in front of you, you're just riding. Normally, you're free riding, you control your throttle. But if you come to traffic, you will just slowly start compressing this air balloon and it will get harder and harder. So that means at the beginning, you will get a small deceleration, giving you feedback that something is close to you. And the closer you get, if you still try to open a throttle to get closer, it gets harder and harder to come closer. We're trying to keep you away from this danger zone. Then, if you decide that this is not dangerous for you and you want to overtake or you want to get closer, you can open the throttle a bit quicker. And this will have the effect of popping the balloon, essentially. That means you overtake the system and you do it on your own. This is always possible.
I love that balloon analogy. That makes total sense. It's super easy to visualize. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what we were getting at the top of the show. Technology acting and communicating and responding intuitively.
And this is all supposed to feel really natural and not at all in your way or in your face. It's an assistance after all. So if it's in your way, that would be completely wrong.
You got to test this firsthand when you met Mathieu at the candy store, workshop.
I did. And well, kind of firsthand because Mathieu had a little bit of bad news for me.
Unfortunately, you're not allowed to ride this bike because it's not released for non-professionals. Mm-hmm. We have special trainings for that. But hopefully we can make it in a way that you can feel the function without riding it.
Sorry to hear that, Shuko.
It's okay. I was at least allowed to ride as a sozia or a passenger.
So as a pillion rider behind him.
But first, Mathieu showed me the bike, which has all Bosch electronic control units.
That's the only high-end bike on the market that has only Bosch ECUs.
Okay.
So that means we can do virtually anything on this bike because we own all of the hardware and the software that is on the electronic side. So that's what we're going to be playing with.
Okay, now I have to admit, I'm getting a little jealous.
Well, I don't know if you can hear it from my voice, but my voice is like one octave higher for this episode.
I can see the smile on your face.
But wait until you hear what this bike sounds like. I mean, really, oh my gosh. But one thing before we start our ride, Jeff, meet Felix.
My name is Felix Hellmann, working almost 6 years now within the team of Mathieu as an Eras application engineer.
Felix is going to be our rabbit today. That means he's going to be the target for the functions. We are in October, Monday morning. It's not so easy to find bikes on the street. So we're going to replicate a normal riding situation with Felix as our rabbit and us on the main bike for you to feel the different functions.
Perfect. So thanks, Felix, for being the rabbit today.
Really like a kid in the candy shop.
Yeah, totally. You cannot imagine. I think I lost like 10 years on this.
The acceleration is insane. So for the listeners, my bike has acceleration as well, but it's no way near as strong as this one.
And they ride together to the sunset.
It was such a beautiful day as well.
I'm guessing the sound quality is noticeably different, maybe a little sketchy because you're recording underneath the helmet. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not the best place to record a podcast. So I apologize to all of the listeners and to you as well, Jeff, that has to listen through all of this. But anyways, once we were out of the town, Mathieu turned on riding distance assist. And on the dashboard of the motorcycle, I could see a small car symbol lighting up green whenever a vehicle had been detected in front of us.
So you can see here Felix is detected, so the car is going green. But I'm not braking. But you feel the bike braking?
I can feel it decelerating.
So if I was looking somewhere else, if I was distracted, then Felix brakes for whatever reason, then I will get the feedback that I need to do something about it.
Okay.
If I accelerate, I can definitely come and shoot into Felix.
Yep,
I'm active. We made the system so that if people are playing, if people are enjoying the ride, we don't want this function to be always intervening and annoying. So we try to make it only intervene when we believe the rider could be in danger.
Did you actually feel the air cushion? Like, did you feel the balloon pop?
It's actually really surprising because I was also a little bit skeptical, by the way, before the whole tests. And even as a passenger, yes, I could. I could also tell when Mathieu was focused on our conversation, for example. He was explaining things to me and the motorcycle automatically decelerated. And I mean, in a really smooth way. So it's not coming as a shock to you. I didn't bump into Mathieu, for example.
That's good.
But it's as a small hint that you should pay more attention.
So this system, it not only reacts to the traffic in front of you, it also takes into account if the rider is attentive or not. I know we had an episode about sensors doing that in a car, cameras looking into the driver's eyes.
I would say similar things are happening here, but without all of the sensors that are built into cars.
By monitoring what's happening with the throttle, what's happening with the brakes, but also what's happening with the dynamics. So that means the lean angle, also how quick the lean angle is changing and so on. We can estimate how active the rider is. Then we make the assumption that if the ride is active, the person should be looking forward and checking what's happening in front.
In this case, the system is entirely passive. Only when you're not attentive will riding distance assist jump in.
That is intuitive and awesome.
It definitely is.
So how about a little bit of a quizzing interruption?
Okay.
I want to challenge you,
Shuko,
you and you, dear listeners, about your knowledge on motorcycle safety.
Oh, God.
So I've prepared for you, it's really a 1 minute lecture about it. Except it's almost entirely made up, save for three true facts.
Okay.
And your job here is to find these truths. So whenever you hear something that you think is actually true, say stop. And if you're right, you'll get a point.
Okay.
And if you're wrong, you'll lose a point.
Oh God.
Are you with me?
Yes.
Let's go. Motorcycle helmets were invented before motorcycles even existed.
False.
Correct you are, Shuko. The first motorcycle was created in 1867.
Oh, wow.
It actually had a steam engine in it and a wooden frame. And the first helmet for the thing didn't come along until 1914.
Wow.
So almost 50 years after the fact. In fact, the first motorcycle helmet was created by a physician.
Okay, interesting facts.
Do you take that as a fact?
I take that as a false fact.
Incorrect.
Is it true?
It's true. Okay. The first helmet was actually developed by a gentleman named Dr. Eric Gardner. He was a British physician because he noticed that he was quite frequently dealing with motorcyclists with head injuries.
Ah, okay.
They were also made out of cotton and plaster, almost like
okay, come on, that is
like
that
a
is,
cast
that
for
is
your
not
head.
True. I can't be.
Good thinking, good thinking. Yes, you're right. You're right. The first models were made out of leather, kind of like the old school rugby helmets.
Mm-hmm.
Today, most helmets are made out of a high-density memory foam, almost like a mattress for your head.
Jeff, where the hell did you put this story together?
All right, you got me there. You got me. Most materials are carbon fibers, glass fibers, Kevlar, resins, and plastics. Riding with a helmet actually became mandatory globally in 2006.
I don't know if this is really true because I've been to your country.
That's right.
I've seen some pretty crazy riding styles there, notably without helmets.
In my state, because there's certainly not a global regulation, we don't even have a federal regulation. So it's different from state to state.
Oh, man.
And so I can tell you in the state of Illinois, where Chicago is, of course, driving with a seatbelt in a car is compulsory, but riding a motorcycle with a helmet is not.
The land of the contradictions.
That's right. I love it. To encourage helmet use, high-end helmets are actually equipped with snack compartments and scented padding to let riders enjoy their favorite smells, and 360-degree visors to have a totally unobstructed view.
I think
have you seen that in your latest helmet?
Obviously, the snack compartment is a must. I mean, I would not be able to survive without a snack compartment. No, well, I honestly, it would be a great idea, but Jeff, come on.
Fair enough. However, most riders do enjoy motorcycle jackets in your very noticeable high visibility reflective colors.
Well, in Germany, I see a mix of everything. I have to admit, I drive mainly in black clothing. My motorcycle is also black, so.
Yeah, you wear black on your Ninja.
Exactly.
Yeah, fits. If you're competing in motorcycle races, you want an actual extra speed boost, you could consider a jacket made of kangaroo leather.
This could be true because I have read that kangaroo leather is lighter.
Yeah, you're so good. I don't know. Yay! I don't know where you get all this stuff
this
from.
Is the
Very
first
well
truth.
Done.
Oh, no, sorry. Second truth, but the first one I got.
Mm-hmm. What about this one? If you're a casual rider and you're just getting into it, and you might need a low-cost model, you can just use some bubble wrap.
No comment.
Fine. Fine. You don't want to play? Fine.
You said you wanted to focus on safety, Jeff. This is a very bad idea.
Fair point. Then, how about this one? To reduce friction, stingray fish skin is used in gloves.
I kind of feel like I don't know about this one because the kangaroo one would kind of made sense. So I would say I'm undivided, but just for the jokes, I'm going to go for yes.
It is true.
Really?
It is true. This was one of the
really?
Ones that I was really, really kind of shocked to learn about. No, it's actually quite effective because it's quite smooth. And so it's allowing you to just go along the road instead of tumbling around it. You know the expression, even I'm not a motorcyclist, but I know the expression, you dress for the slide.
Yeah, not for the ride. Yep.
That's the good one. And then what about this? The true pros put magnets in their boots to help keep their feet on the pegs.
Probably I need this. No, I'm joking. So I would say this is a hard no.
That is a hard no. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Magnets tend to also be quite heavy. So it's kind of going against the spirit of racing efficiency to adding a bunch of weight on there like that.
True.
All right. Good job, Shuko.
Yay!
As always, your expertise and prowess as a subject matter expert pays off.
Well, I missed one, but I definitely learned some fun facts, especially the stingray one. I think that's going to be my new fun fact at any kind of motorbike ride that I go for. It's like, did you know stingray? Did you know stingray? So thank you, Jeff. I have one more real fun thing to share, which is almost too good to be true, but in fact, entirely true. And that is group ride assist.
The second new assistant function that is made specifically for motorcycle riders, and in this case, groups of riders.
Because that's another case where adaptive cruise control, so ACC, is not really helpful.
I do assume that this has to do with the fact that motorcyclists ride in a staggered pattern, like a zigzag, sharing one lane.
That's exactly it.
What will happen is that if you are number two in the group, so that means your group partner, if we may, is on the left or the right side of you, then we would just shoot by. We would not take care of this as a target because he's in your lane, but not really in your line. And this meant that ACC was just not behaving correctly.
Because it keeps the distance to the vehicle in front of you, mm-hmm. but not to the motorcycle in the front and offset to the left or right.
Exactly. And there's also a second problem, which is the standard distance that ACC keeps. It's a bit too big for a group ride.
Meaning the pack is not very compact and cars would very easily sneak in and break the pack.
Of course, I tested this too with Mathieu and Felix on some windy roads near Abstadt.
But once you put it on, normal ACC will just mitigate target in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
With the group ride assist option activated, it will look for motorcycle situations.
Okay.
So now we can ask Felix to overtake us.
So there goes our rabbit.
Yep. Now I can set the speed again. So now I'm basically not doing anything. I'm just steering the bike, mm-hmm. brake, and throttle is done for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see for the moment, Felix is in line with us.
Yep.
So the vehicle here is detected as a normal vehicle.
Okay.
We're not riding in a motorcycle pattern. However, if I switch a bit to the left side of the lane, yeah, you can see now we've got a motorcycle formation.
Mm-hmm.
So actually we see that our target is on the right side, now in the middle. So it will always try to understand that whether or not we've got a motorcycle riding situation, so this staggered riding. And if we have one, it will try to understand if we are to the left of the pack, to the right of the pack, or if for some limited time we're actually just in the middle.
Okay.
What's actually happening here is the radar sensors recognize that we're riding in a formation and the cruise control doesn't work against that. But it helps us keep the formation, even when we're changing the lane to overtake some trucks. It was really fascinating.
So that's also what GRA allows, that we can overtake with the pack, fall back with the pack without having to disengage ACC mm-hmm. every time, put it back on and so on. It kind of understands what we want to do as riders with riders.
And that's it. That's the world first group ride assist function for motorcycles.
That's incredible.
I'm
still trying to figure out what the catch is, what the downside is. Does it only work if everyone in the group has the system on their bike? Does it only work with a certain number of riders?
I always love that you have such pertinent questions, Jeff, but I can
assure
you...
Skeptical Jeff in the house.
No, I would say these are really good questions because, as said, these were also questions that I asked Mathieu when we were riding. So nope and nope. It works for each bike individually. So whether I'm the one who has it or everyone in my group has it, it doesn't really make a difference. And maybe because you were talking about Canch, this is a brand new system. So it will probably be available in more high-end bikes first. But as with all other features, you know, I cannot wait to see it becoming available in more affordable bikes as well.
In the future, I believe you'll have even more choice about the functions available on your motorcycle. Because I know that one function is expanding from cars to motorcycles as well. And that's the digital services and the over-the-air updates.
That's true.
And with that, you could say, for example, let me add this new group ride assist function to my bike and just pay a few extra dollars or euros more for the service.
Or maybe I want the function just for, you know, let's say one weekend, because I'm not usually riding in groups. But now I'm going on a weekend trip with friends, so I can subscribe and have access to it for a limited time. And that would be perfect.
Remember how we started the show? We talked about how difficult it is to make technology evoke the feeling that we want and needed to evoke. So before we wrap up, can we spend a couple minutes on how Mathieu and his team achieved this? Because it seems like it did feel very natural and intuitive for you.
So I can again confirm it felt very natural and intuitive. And Mathieu told me it was really not easy to get to this point. The first issue is, how do you translate that feeling that you want to achieve into specification and code? You do remember how Mathieu described the feeling of a compressing air cushion in riding distance assist? How do you actually formalize that? And then, you know, you need to implement it. These functions rely on radar and ABS. So you need to make these two systems work together.
Getting the system to work together, we needed to make the teams work together as well. So we've got a team that works on part of the implementation in the ABS and another team that works on part of the implementation in the radar.
Is there some kind of friction between radar people and ABS people?
So what Mathieu told me, it's not the friction, it's just that they come with different mindsets.
A radar is a stochastic device. It's just trying to understand the world. It gets a lot of information, and based on thresholds, it will take a decision saying, okay, it looks like this vehicle is going left because I've calculated this and it goes just above this threshold, and so be it. The ABS on the other side is more deterministic. It's like A plus B equals C. If I do the same thing 10 times, it will give me the same result. If you try 10 times the same thing with a radar in real world, it will give you 10 times something slightly different because the world always looks a bit different to a radar. So getting these two worlds to meet and work together, the ECU but also the people, because the mindset is also very attached to this stochastic versus deterministic. So on the ABS side, we'll have people who do a test on a test track and they will have to do this and that test. And if they validate it, then this will be correct. On the radar side, we will have to do X thousand kilometers and extract key performance indicators, so KPIs, to make sure that the system behaves as good as possible in an average case.
That makes so much sense. How did these people then manage to create something together that works so well?
I think riding together is what solved it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's surprisingly easy once we get together and have a bike available. Us being in Germany and the other part of the team being in Japan for the base development for this makes it not that easy. But every time we get together, we see massive progress because when we sit on the bike, we talk the same language.
Honestly, that's like music to my ears because I fully understand what he means with this. It's crazy when you go out and ride, it's exactly the same thing. No matter your background, age, or whatever, we all speak the same language. But anyways, I digress. So going back to the topic, you feel what works and what doesn't, what feels right and what needs improvement.
Intuitively. Again, that word. And it's fascinating look behind the scenes.
So as a lot of you might notice, I could talk about this for hours, but you know,
she does.
I don't want to bore certain car brains.
Oh, no, you're not.
Oh, you're
no,
a car
no,
brain,
you're not.
Jeff?
No, not at all. This is honestly very, truly interesting stuff. It's fascinating to see how we're advancing these technologies, how we're bringing services and solutions from across different disciplines together. Shuko, thank you very much.
You are very welcome. And I just also want to thank Mathieu, Felix, and the whole team behind who really took the time to also show me this in live. So again, big thank you and you're welcome, Jeff. Now I just need to find another excuse to go back and ride one of those bikes again, but this is something I'll talk with Mathieu.
I think we can see that Shuko is hooked on that sweet bike candy.
Definitely.
All right, everyone. Bye-bye. And stay tuned for a short message from us in just a few seconds.
Au revoir.
From know-how to wow. The Bosch Global Podcast.
Dear listeners, from Know How to Wow is taking a break.
We hope you won't forget us and will be joining us again when we're back. See you soon.